This week's episode of Movie Fighters is brought to you by One Shot, the RPG podcast where you get to go along on a one-shot adventure with some very, very funny people.
Chris and I have both been on episodes of One Shot. It is a lot of fun. And guess what, Chris?
I could not even begin to guess, Matt.
It is their one-year anniversary, and this week they put up the first episode of their one-year anniversary special. It's a big blowout episode of One Shot. It's a great place to start listening to the show. The host of the show, James D'Amato, also has a companion podcast called Critical Success, where he and his guests analyze the narrative theory behind gaming to give listeners insight on how to be better gaming players. That's some deep stuff right there. And plenty of stuff that I think could be useful and fun for our listeners here on Movie Fighters. So go download One Shot, find the episodes with Chris and with me, and every other episode over the past year. Go listen to those, and go check out Critical Success.
Folks, I gotta say, if you want to listen to One Shot, and you're not sure if you should listen to One Shot, the episode that I was on, we played a game called Feng Shui, which is inspired by 80s action movies. I played a character who was inspired by Jackie Chan from the Police Story movies. My character's name was Inspector Jackie. The villain of that campaign turned out to be Destro.
And my episode was we played a game of Fiasco, which is a game that is about creating a Coen Brothers movie. So if you're into them, you can check that out. It's also an X-Men related thing, and Magneto shows up. But either one would be a great place to start, or their one-year anniversary special. Whatever episode you go download, go listen to One Shot. Grayskull, ring the bell, sucker! This is Movie Fighters, the
Matt,
show
I'm gonna
where...
need you to put on pants now. The furry loincloth was fine for the intro, but I'm really, really going to need you to put on some pants.
I may not. But this is Movie Fighters, the show where I, Matt Wilson, and Chris Sims, we watch movies and beat them up. And yes, we have finally returned. We are back. We are on iTunes. We have done our number zero episode. And this week we are watching an actual movie. And that movie is He-Man and She-Ra, The Secret of the Sword, the 1985 animated feature. This is not the live action Masters of the Universe movie. This is a full length animated feature film with He-Man and She-Ra. Now, Chris, were you a He-Man guy?
I mean, I think I was when I was really, really young. Like, my mom is often fond of telling stories about getting He-Man stuff for me, even before we moved to South Carolina, so when I was like 3 or 4 years old. The thing that I remember being into was Mask and G.I. Joe. I don't remember ever being into He-Man, though. Now,
I was deep into He-Man when I was like
deep
three.
Into He-Man?
That's right. When I was like 3, 4 years old, I watched the He-Man cartoon all the time. I had He-Man books. In fact, I had the He-Man books that ended up being the basis for a lawsuit over the He-Man characters. So
what's the lawsuit?
The lawsuit was over basically ownership of He-Man's backstory. Mattel commissioned this artist, writer, comics guy to write some little storybooks, little golden storybooks about He-Man and his background. And he later, like within the past 3 or 4 years, decided to sue Mattel and say that he had come up with all the backstory for He-Man. I do not think that that case worked out very well for him. But
we should say, by the way, that He-Man's backstory is bananas. Our good friend Dylan Todd is a I don't even know if he's a fan of like the He-Man franchise, but he loves the backstory stuff because it's like bonkers complicated and goes back like millions of years. Like, there's so much weird stuff, and it has to incorporate all kinds of weird stuff. Like, the marketing for He-Man in other countries has to be explained. It's really, like, go look it up. Go just look up the timeline of Eternia at some point if you just want to get weird.
There's a lot there. These storybooks gave kind of the basics of where He-Man came from, how he became He-Man, why this prince who's always wearing a pink vest is also He-Man, everything about Castle Grayskull. It's got all that stuff in there, and I watched all that stuff. Now, I do not remember watching this movie when I was a kid, but I feel like I had to. My Aunt Diane used to tape cartoons for me constantly, and she would give my mom the tapes, and then I would watch the tapes all the time. He-Man was on there. Like Captain Power cartoons were on there. A lot of Ghostbusters stuff. I just used to watch those constantly. I have to imagine that this movie was on one of those tapes, but I do not recall having watched this movie specifically. In fact, I couldn't tell you what happened in an episode of He-Man.
People will know me as a G.I. Joe fan. I accidentally had a G.I. Joe themed 32nd birthday party yesterday where I was wearing a G.I. Joe t-shirt, and then we started watching G.I. Joe Retaliation, and that cleared the room out. I ended up watching the end of that movie alone. But like, the thing that I was a big fan of with G.I. Joe was the cartoon. Like, when I was a kid, I really liked the cartoon, and as an adult, I actually really like the cartoon because it's a lot smarter than I think a lot of people give that stuff credit for just basically being a 22-minute toy commercial, which, let's be honest, it was. But I have an ex-girlfriend she was a really big He-Man and She-Ra fan. And when we were going out, she would go to sleep by just turning on the TV and, like, setting a timer so that she could She-Ra would play, and she would just fall asleep while that was on. So I watched an episode of She-Ra. And I watched an episode of He-Man, and they're terrible. I can watch G.I. Joe as an adult and, like, appreciate it and think it's funny and enjoyable. Like, it's definitely for kids. It's silly. But, like, He-Man and She-Ra are awful.
I had a similar experience when I was in college, and suddenly Morpheus and Kazaa, remember those, were available to me. And
talking about LimeWire? Do you ever get on LimeWire?
I never really used LimeWire.
I used Kazaa a lot.
But when I had those available to me and had the library of every cartoon ever made in the 1980s, I downloaded a ton of Masters of the Universe episodes. Because I was like, oh, I gotta see what these were like. I gotta revisit them. And I tried to watch them, and they were awful. There's tons of recycled animation in there. The stories are so slow so babyish.
It'll fool you, too. It'll fool you, because you'll go look at that million-year backstory, and you'll go look at the background animation. Like, we did a big feature on Comics Alliance where we found a bunch of the background art for He-Man, and it's beautiful. Like, the painted backgrounds, they're gorgeous. So, like, it'll fool you into thinking it's going to be good, and it's not at
there's
all.
There's a piece of animation where Prince Adam laughs that I swear to God is in every episode of Masters of the Universe.
Yes, yes.
It's in every single one. There's also, like, Orko animation that's just recycled constantly. There's also Skeletor laughing that gets recycled in every episode.
Yes.
So all that is to say, I do not have super high hopes for this movie. Now, before we get going, I should explain why we're watching Secret of the Sword. Because, Chris, I don't know that we would have picked this on our own.
I don't think we would have. We watched G.I. Joe, the movie, which we didn't we did not enjoy. And if we didn't enjoy that, I don't think we would have volunteered to watch a He-Man She-Ra movie.
Outside of the first 5 minutes, we did not enjoy it. I think we would be more likely to watch the live-action Masters of the Universe than this. Just because it's so weird.
It's so weird and Kirby-inspired, too.
And has, like, Frank Langella as Skeletor and stuff. But
we should watch that. We actually should watch that.
The reason we're watching this is because it was suggested by one of our Kickstarter backers, Jeffrey Wickstrom. And here's what here's why we're watching the version we're watching. We are not watching the official version of Secret of the Sword. We are watching an extra long fan edit with deleted scenes added in.
And I was not informed about that.
He said in his request that we specifically had to watch the longest version on YouTube, which is this one. This has deleted scenes inserted into the movie. It's still only about an hour 36, but it is the longer version of He-Man and She-Ra, The Secret of the Sword.
Okay, now do we know what The Secret of the Sword is, or is that something we're going to find out?
I assume it has to do with He-Man's sword.
Okay.
Something about Castle Grayskull. I really don't know. I have not really gone and read anything about this movie. Sort of intentionally for hoping that I could be surprised somewhat by it. But I'm sure when we come back, we will have some more background info about Secret of the Sword. But Chris, let's not mess around anymore. Let's just get into it. Let's watch He-Man and She-Ra, The Secret of the Sword. Listeners, we will be back very shortly to talk about the movie. Okay, we are back from watching The Secret of the Sword, and I am not going to say anything bad about our donor, Jeffrey Wickstrom, who invited us, who made us watch this movie, but I will say, fuck you, Jeffrey Wickstrom, for making us watch this movie.
We sold those make us watch a movie slots way too cheap for this. Also, Matt, to be fair, like, we made a mistake. We, I think, made a pretty big mistake because, not to give too much of a look behind the scenes at how the sausage of Movie Fighters is made, we broke for dinner after watching the movie.
Yeah.
So we went away for probably about a half hour. And came back to record the second part of the show here. And having taken that half-hour break, I cannot tell you anything that happened in this movie.
I'm gonna run down the plot.
But I do want to know: does America still stand after the years we spent watching this movie?
How fares
the nation?
Boy, it did go on, didn't it? One thing that I discovered, I started poking around on IMDb and elsewhere just for any info about this movie, and it was basically made to be 5 episodes of She-Ra.
Yeah, it feels like the pilot to She-Ra.
Yeah, the Secret of the Sword that we did not know as going into the movie is, in fact, the sword that He-Man is given at the very beginning of the movie. Is She-Ra's sword, and she is not She-Ra yet as this movie is starting up. She is, in fact, a commander in the army of Hordak.
Yes.
An evil tyrant who leads an evil horde, which he calls an evil horde.
Right.
In the land of Etheria, which is a parallel universe to Eternia.
There are a lot of dimensions in He-Man, because the She-Ra's from another dimension, they talk about how Orko's from another dimension.
Right.
In the Christmas special, which I've seen, and I, like, if you were going to watch one stupid He-Man She-Ra thing, watch that Christmas special, Because it's actually kind of a hoot. Because Earth is a parallel dimension to Eternia, and Skeletor ends up hanging out with these two precocious kids and learning the true meaning of Christmas. So if you have a choice, watch that. Do not watch The Secret of the Sword.
No, do not watch it. And here's something that I think is kind of damning. We watched the extended version that had the deleted scenes included, right?
Yes.
I could not begin to tell you which scenes were deleted.
Well, yeah, it's really hard to tell because they're all so necessary to the plot.
Right.
They're all so important.
Everything just drives the plot so beautifully.
Can I ask you a question, Matt?
Sure.
What did you do while we watched this movie? Because I rearranged the action figures on my desk and then played about 6 games of Bejeweled on my phone.
I played some games on my phone.
Did you Simpsons Tapped Out?
I did some.
Did you get some Marvel Puzzle Quest?
I was doing some Marvel Puzzle Quest on my phone. I was reading stuff about the movie on Wikipedia and IMDb.
I scrolled through Tumblr 3 or 4 times.
I did some Twitter watching. I did not give this movie my full attention because here's something you should know about this movie. It's for tiny babies who need to be reminded of everything constantly. Characters just have to announce things all the time to make sure you get it.
My favorite example of this is that there's a part where Glimmer says, "Oh, we need to go save my mother." And then they go and save her. Less than 10 minutes later. I mean, it felt like 4 hours, but what do you think? Less than 10 minutes they go rescue her from harpies that have no other bearing on the plot?
I'd say, yeah, within 10 minutes.
Within 10 minutes. And they free her. And He-Man is like, "Glimmer's sure going to be glad you're okay." And the queen goes, "Glimmer? My daughter?"
Yeah.
Like, just to make sure all of the tiny, stupid babies watching this show are on the same page.
Also of note, the main plot of this thing ends an hour into it. Hordak is defeated, and She-Ra is created after an hour.
Yeah. There are 3 points in this movie where we're like, okay, it's over. Why is there 45 minutes left?
Well, I believe the Hordak defeat is the end of what has to be the 3rd episode of the 5. But then they need 2 more episodes. So He-Man and She-Ra have to go save the queen from the harpies. And then they have to do the episode where they go back to Eternia. And Skeletor is there and stuff. Those are pretty clearly the 4th and 5th episodes in the 5 episodes.
Yeah, so here's the basic outline of what happens in this movie. The sorceress, who has a bird for a hair, her hair is a bird. I don't understand that.
Well, she can turn into a bird.
Yeah, but also her hair is a bird.
Right.
So she has a dream, and she wakes up from that dream and goes, "Oh, there just happens to be a dimensional portal in my house now. I better give He-Man a sword that he needs to take to this other dimension."
So, to be slightly more specific, she has a dream about something that happened, I don't know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I forgot. We have baby stealing.
In which Hordak steals a baby.
I like that it's young Hordak, too. Like, they give him different clothes. Like, that is what they spent the animation budget on, was giving, like, doing an extra design for Hordak. So it's young Hordak just, like, stealing a baby and going, "I'm gonna steal this baby!"
And he runs through a portal while he's laughing. That is the first thing that happens in the movie. The very first line is, "I'm taking this baby!" Sorceress wakes up in, like, a cold sweat. She remembers that she has this sword that she kind of doesn't, she knows what it is, but she's not letting anything on. She calls Prince Adam to Castle Grayskull. Prince Adam's like, "Hey there, sorceress, what's going on?" And this is how, that's how everybody on the show talks.
Although Prince Adam sounds like, voices later.
Prince Adam sounds like he's holding his nose, so he's like, hey there, Sorceress.
Hey there, Sorceress.
Yeah.
What's going on?
And Sorceress says, like, hey, I got this sword. There's this portal in my house. I need you to go through the portal and, like, figure out who this sword is for. It's for somebody special through that portal. So why don't you go through there and see what's up? And it's... I don't know... We, neither one of us understood why the sorceress was being so withholding of information here.
Like, yeah, it's really weird, because when they come back later, she's like, okay, here's the deal. You're He-Man's sister, and I erased everybody's memories so they wouldn't be sad that their baby got kidnapped. But I knew all this going in. I'm glad He-Man found you. And by the way, I'm also glad he didn't kill you, because you were leading the opposing army. And He-Man went there to, like, commit murders.
Well,
like, that's why he has a giant sword and a tiger that eats people.
To try to bring a little bit of sense to this movie, I'm going to suggest what it could be, why the sorceress might not have told him. It seems like telling him, hey, your twin sister is through this portal, you should go find her. And even worse, I know this is a show for babies, but, like, let's say even worse, He-Man goes through the portal, he meets his sister, and then is attracted to her. And does something he shouldn't.
Well, look, let's be clear. Matt, you were very sexually attracted to both He-Man and She-Ra while we were watching this movie.
Oh, yes.
I heard a lot of pant rummaging.
I was moving my microphone around, but you believe what you want. I just think the only reason she wouldn't give the information that She-Ra is He-Man's sister is that she might be dead. Like, He-Man might get through the portal and then find out that, oh, Adora, we remember her. She's dead now.
Yeah, except that, like, doesn't she, like, isn't Adora in her vision? Like, isn't modern-day Adora in her vision?
Possibly. I do not remember the vision in its entirety.
I'm not going back to watch.
I'm not either. So, what happens is, He-Man just is like, well, okay. Well, Prince Adam is just like,
well, okay, if you say so, Sorceress.
He goes through the portal with Cringer, who is the worst. And they basically wind up very quickly in a bar, a tavern. You called it a D&D tavern, right?
Yes.
And they encounter some of Hordak's soldiers there. They also encounter Bo, who is a mustachioed fellow in a very, let's say, showy outfit.
I'm glad that you avoided flamboyant.
Yeah. But it does have a big arrow pointing to his dick.
Yeah. The way I described it was, if you've not seen Bo, go ahead and Google Bo from She-Ra. It's a reverse corset. All the parts of his chest that would be covered by a corset are open. And so he has, like, his pecs covered, and then, like, a pointy thing from his pecs to his navel that is like an arrow pointing at his crotch.
Yes. Did you get the sense that he was supposed to be, like, is supposed to be kind of like an Errol Flynn sort of guy?
Yeah, I think that is what he is meant to be. Having watched episodes of She-Ra before, the few episodes that I've watched, he is She-Ra's dashing love interest.
Yeah. He's supposed to be like kind of a Robin Hood, Errol Flynn kind of guy.
Yeah.
I kept thinking he reminded me of Timothy Dalton, but I guess that's about the right time.
Oh, like Timothy Dalton in Flash Gordon? Like,
yeah,
Prince Baron?
A little bit. Prince Baron, yeah.
Meh.
A much worse version.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see that's sort of the look they're going for with it.
So there's a long scene where, like, the Hordak soldiers are terrorizing the people in this bar, and Cringer is going like, I'm gonna go under this table. And Prince Adam, who is apparently still super jacked and really strong when he's not He-Man, and Bo, like, beat the crap out of the Hordak soldiers and throw them into trash cans. And then Bo and He-Man kind of, like, wipe their hands off and leave. So they go back to where Bo came from. He's a member of this big rebellion that is fighting against Hordak's evil horde, which has taken over the entire planet of Etheria.
Except for this one forest.
Except for this one forest where Bo and all the rest of the Resistance lives.
Yeah, which is weird. All the Resistance lives in this forest. Hordak has, like, airplanes and bombs.
And tanks.
And tanks. Everybody lives in about, like, what would you say, like, 100 square feet of that forest?
It's a small area, yeah.
Yeah, just maybe, you know, like, I mean, look, I don't want the forces of evil to win or anything. I'm just saying, fucking carpet bomb that shit, and your problem is over.
Well, Hordak makes a lot of strategic mistakes that we will get into.
Hordak makes nothing but strategic mistakes, but there's actually one thing that I want to talk about with this scene in the bar, which is that Prince Adam goes over to this other dimension as Prince Adam. I don't understand why he's not He-Man, like, for the entirety of this movie.
And yet
because he has no reason to preserve a secret identity in this other dimension. Cringer is useless. Battlecat is useful. Battlecat is, I think, the only character that we were talking about, like, does not suck totally.
Correct.
In this thing, but only when he's Battlecat, not when he's Cringer.
Cringer sucks the most when he's Cringer.
Why is he walking around like Prince Adam? Like, when he could just be He-Man and sort everything out.
Yet, later in the movie, the fact that he's Prince Adam and not He-Man actually comes into play. Because one of Hordak's soldiers sees him and doesn't recognize him. When they would almost certainly recognize He-Man.
My question about He-Man is, why does he have a secret identity? I have no idea what his secret identity serves to accomplish. Because, from my understanding, Skeletor's trying to kill Prince Adam, too. Skeletor already wants to kill Prince Adam's family. So there's no striking at He-Man through his relatives, you know? There's no problem there.
My main explanation for why there is a Prince Adam and a He-Man is they're two toys.
Right, right. But, like, I feel like you have to justify that. You can't just say, okay, this is how it is because there's two toys. Like, you have to at least write a reason for it. You know, and maybe that's because I've been reading a lot of the G.I. Joe comics, and poor Larry Hama has to kind of justify every three issues when they get new recruits for the new season of action figures. Like, he kind of has to justify their presence. But, like, you can't just, like, you can't just have, like, there's no reason for him to have a secret identity. But I will give that to him. Because, you know, there's a very Clark Kent Superman thing. There's a very, you know, Don Diego Zorro thing going on with Prince Adam where he's a cowardly weakling, but He-Man's so strong. Adora? There's no way. There is no way to justify people not looking at Adora or looking at She-Ra and going, hey, that's Adora in a white dress.
Yeah, she doesn't even get the tan that He-Man gets.
Here is my theory that I came up with watching this movie. You and I, Matt, we're from Earth. We live in human culture.
That we do.
Where we are disposed to recognize people by their faces. You know, you look at someone's face and that's how you recognize them. I think that in Eternia, people recognize each other by their thighs. Which is why, first of all, nobody covers their thighs, ever. Except Prince Adam wears tights.
Right.
And She-Ra wears a skirt.
Correct.
So you can see Adora's thighs, you can't see She-Ra's. You can see He-Man's thighs, you can't see Prince Adam's. That's the only way I have to justify that nobody just goes, yeah, that's... It's Adora, right? Are we just going to pretend that's not Adora?
Then how do you explain Man-in-Arms, who wears pants?
Oh, it's because he's old.
Okay. He's got that mustache.
Yeah, he's got that mustache. He's old. He has a daughter. He has a daughter who doesn't understand the concept of the word daughter.
He-Man goes and meets up with this Resistance, while he's at the Resistance camp, the absolute worst character in the entire movie, Madame Raz, shows up on her flying, talking broomstick and says that Hordak's people, Hordak's soldiers, are going to enslave the entire town.
Hordak's soldiers are going to enslave the entire town.
If the Resistance doesn't hand over the two guys that beat up the Hordak soldiers in the bar. And Boaz says, well, Prince Adam, you stay here. Maybe they'll be okay just taking me. Prince Adam says, like, no, let's fight them.
Maybe that's why this Resistance can't get anything done, because they don't know about fighting. All right, fighting! That's a thing we can do.
So Prince Adam rallies them up. He turns into He-Man, and they storm the town.
I think we both don't like Madame Raz.
She's the worst.
She's the absolute fucking pits. Like, I literally wrote in my notes, I have one note that says, Catra is awful. Under that, I wrote, actually, wait, Madame Raz is the actual fucking worst. Madame Raz keeps casting spells that go wrong because she messes up words that kind of sound like the word she is trying to say.
But sometimes they don't sound like the word she's trying to say. She just says the wrong word. Like, okay, the two examples I'm going to give. One is, she says that they need a flying ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
But instead, she says a frying ship and conjures up this, like, giant frying pan with wings. Hilarious.
Yeah.
The second time, the Resistance people are fighting a monster in the woods, and she means to say, you know, boil, boil, double, double, make the monster go away. But instead, she says, make the vines go away, because there are vines covering the monster's eyes.
Yeah, she's really terrible. And all these spells rhyme and take about 3 minutes to say. Like, they take a real long time to say.
Yeah, and they're all just, like, these shitty boil, boil, toil and trouble kind of rhymes that are super forced. Every one of them is just the most forced thing.
It is really awful.
So she's awful.
She's really bad. Like, she's the worst thing in the movie. She's the worst thing on She-Ra in my memory. But I think we can both be glad that Andrew Dice Clay's wife was getting some work.
You talking about Melindy Britt? No, wait, no. She's Princess Adora.
I want to be a voice actress.
Linda Gary did the voice for Madame Raz.
So I was talking to my old lady, and she goes, I'm gonna be a witch on She-Ra.
That's the voice Madame Raz has.
Oh, dearie my.
She does. While we're on the topic of voice acting, this is around the point in the movie where I said, everyone's voice is terrible.
Yeah, I wrote down... You said, we weren't 10 minutes into it. That is the first note I have, is you saying that.
Guess how many voice actors are in this movie?
I would say 38.
Seven.
are all the voices in this show done by seven people?
Seven people.
Hilarious.
John Irwin is Prince Adam, He-Man, and Beast-Man. He gets by with only three. Melindy Britt is Princess Adora, She-Ra, Catra, and Hunga the Harpy.
That's a lot of range.
Alan Oppenheimer is Skeletor, Man-at-Arms, Cringer, Battlecat, Bald Rebel, and Chief Allen.
Oh, he's the guy who plays Angus Scrim from Phantasm, who shows up in this movie.
He's the Bald Rebel, yeah. Linda Gary is Teela, Queen Marlena, Sorceress, Shadow Weaver, Glimmer, and Madame Raz.
Well, that makes sense. Or no, wait, I'm sorry, I was about to say that Glimmer and Shadow Weaver are actually sisters, but I'm thinking of the witch that shows up later in She-Ra named Casta Spella.
Yuck.
Yeah, just giving up.
George DiCenzo gets by with only two, Bo and Hordak. Erica Scheimer is Queen Angela and Imp. And Lou Scheimer, the producer of He-Man does all of these voices. King Randor, Swiftwind, Cowl, Mantana, Horde Trooper, Cobra Khan, Trapjaw, Triclops, Broom, Sprag, Sprocker, Garv the Innkeeper, Bard, Messenger, Horde Computer.
Now, do you think that's necessity? Or do you think that's like, he's like, yeah, I'm going to get myself 20 paychecks.
Probably necessity. I would say the budget on this, movie in particular, almost all went to animation. And almost not at all went to voice acting.
Well, that's something we should talk about, because the animation in this movie, like in Secret of the Sword, is sometimes good. It's like, there will be like really interesting, you know, you compared it to, what's his name?
Don Bluth.
Don Bluth, yeah. There's rotoscoping, very, very clearly that actually looks pretty good. And, you know, we talked about the backgrounds before and how good the backgrounds look. But then, like, everything else is garbage. Like, it is like 80% just really terrible.
Well, it's like we said, a lot of it just gets recycled over and over again. Like that animation of He-Man punching at the screen, which does not look bad. It's decent animation. Just gets used over and over and over again.
It's four times in this movie.
It gets used all the time on the show too. It's just constant reuse of animation. Like, I think the animation of Skeletor running is the same Skeletor running animation you've seen every single time he runs. Okay, but back to the plot of Secret of the Sword. So there's this big attack on the town. It does not go great for the rebels.
Doesn't go great for the movie fighters either.
Does not. They have to fall back, and He-Man gets captured. This happens several times. This is
between
the first...
them. He-Man and She-Ra are captured five times in this movie.
Yeah,
is that right? It's four or five.
It's like there are five episodes. The protagonists get captured around once per episode. So He-Man gets captured. He is taken to Hordak's headquarters and is like shackled to a table. The rebels decide that they have to go deal with this and try to save him. So they start their quest through Hordak's headquarters to try to go get him. Meanwhile, He-Man encounters, I believe this is the first time he encounters Adora. She's actually the one who captures him. Okay. So she goes to see him while he's imprisoned. And he tells her that the Horde is actually evil. Now keep in mind, Hordak in an earlier scene described it as the evil Horde. Hordak is fully aware that he is evil and everything he's doing is evil. And we were kind of saying, like, how in the world could Adora not know that the evil Horde is evil? Now we do get a little bit of an explanation for that. Because we find out that Adora is being mind-controlled.
Yeah, this is, like, of everything in this movie, it's the one thing they satisfactorily explain.
Because we asked the question, we said, how in the world could she not know? And then there's a conversation between Hordak and Shadow Weaver, where Shadow Weaver says, we're controlling her mind, we're blinding her with enchantments. So yeah. I'll give that one to them.
Because it's not just like that Hordak calls it the evil Horde when she's not around. It's that, you know, she's talking to Hordak, who looks like Nosferatu and wears a collar made of human bones.
He's got a bone collar.
He wears bones.
It reminds me very much of that Mitchell and Webb sketch where they're playing Nazis. Where they're playing Nazis and they say, hey, have you noticed that we have skulls on our collars? I think we might be the baddies. It's the same thing. It's like if you're getting commands from a guy with a bone collar, you might be the bad guys.
Yeah, just heads up, you know, go into work tomorrow, check and see if your boss is wearing, I'm going to say any part of a corpse. Like if he or she has human bones, is sitting maybe on a throne made of human bones. If your boss is sitting on any kind of throne, maybe that's a bad sign.
So if you work for the Pope, think about it.
90% of Movie Fighters downloads do come from Vatican City.
That's true.
I should say.
Oh, so He-Man sends Adora off into the land of Etheria for her to see the real world and go decide for herself whether the people there are evil. And she goes off on a journey and she sees a group of slaves being led around by Hordax soldiers. And a guy falls on the ground. He says, "I need water. Please, please, water." And a Hordak soldier says, "I'll give you some water." And he picks the guy up and throws him in a lake. And the camera just zooms in on Adora's face as she's taking this in.
I do not remember that happening. I do remember playing a sick game of Bejeweled at that time, though.
Meanwhile, the rebels are breaking into Hordak's stronghold. And again, Battle Cat is the only one doing anything worth a shit. Battle Cat is busting through doors. He's shielding people from lasers. Bo does get in one shot where he destroys a laser bank thing. But everyone else is terrible. And doesn't do anything to help. But Battle Cat eventually gets them into where He-Man's being imprisoned. But in the process, Hordak and his people walk in the room just as Battle Cat's about to save He-Man. They shoot Battle Cat and the rest of the rebels with these freeze ray things. And I think this is where Hordak makes his biggest mistake. He could have killed everyone right then and there, and the rebellion would have been dealt with. They would have been done. They would have been gone. But instead, he just freezes them and says, "Take them to a prison cell, an uncomfortable one," and then leaves He-Man behind on the table while the little Orko character, the She-Ra version of Orko. What is that thing called?
It's Cowl. Cowl.
Cowl. Cowl.
Yeah. For a second, I thought you were talking about Madame Raz.
No, I meant Cowl. Cowl, the little flying bat thing, comes and gets He-Man out of his shackles by pressing a button that just makes them disappear.
Yeah. Sorcery and technology collide in the land of Eternia and Etheria, my friend.
This is where it's very obvious that the animation budget ran out, and they were not able to animate He-Man actually getting out of his shackles.
So how many drafts do you disappear? Think this script went through where they were just make it cheaper. Make some stuff disappear. Have He-Man punch something four times.
He-Man goes and sets the rebels free, and then we're pretty much back to square one, right? The rebels are back where they are. Even after Adora comes back from her little trip where she found out that slaves get abused, she talks to Hordak about this. She confronts Hordak, and she says, "I'm siding with the rebels. You're evil. You're mean to slaves." They just brainwash her again.
Yeah, they straight up just re-enchant her. And then we have to go through it all again.
We go all the way back to square one. And then we start with Hordak's new plan, where he's got this device called the Magna Transporter that he's going to use to just basically pick up the forest where the rebellion hangs out, and he's going to transport them to a place where nothing is ever found again.
Yeah. Matt, when does this come back in the climax? When do they address this threat?
At the end of the episode, basically, in about 15 minutes.
Okay, so wait, that doesn't come back in the climax? That's not like a big deal?
It doesn't come back at the end of the movie. It is dealt with. It's dealt with in about 15 minutes. And I'll give you a secret: She-Ra throws a rock at it.
Oh.
But he's got this device that is his big new plan for getting rid of the rebellion. When he could have just killed them when they tried to save He-Man.
Yeah. Or, again, he knows where they are. He has tanks. Like, this is one of the things that I don't get about He-Man. Because, like, it seems easy. It's like, yeah, it is a land of magic and technology. There's sorcery and science in equal measure. Not really, though. Like the bad guys have computers and tanks and witches. And the good guys live in the woods.
And have swords. So, as it turns out, this machine that he has, the Magna Transporter, which has to be explained like 7 times. Like, the Magna Transporter? What's that? What could that do? Turns out, for it to be usable, they have to charge it up. And they haven't been charging it up before until right now. The only way to charge it is by extracting the willpower of the rebels. So there's a scene where they bring in this bald guy who looks like Angus Scrimm. They put him in a little box, and they extract his willpower. And that charges up the machine a little bit. There's another fight scene. He-Man gets captured again, and he gets put in the box. And they start extracting his willpower. As this is going on, Adora is like in the room where He-Man's having his power extracted. She's having a little bit of a crisis of conscience. She's not sure how to feel about Hordak and the Horde anymore. And she looks at the sword that Prince Adam brought with him through the teleporter, the dimensional divide. And her sword has a little jewel in it, which makes it very convenient for the sorceress to, like, come through on the jewel, say, hey, you know what? Hordak is evil. And he kidnapped you when you were a baby. And you're He-Man's twin sister. So, stop being part of the Horde and take this sword and help him. So She-Ra, or Adora, takes the sword. We see her transformation sequence for the first time. She turns into She-Ra, and she saves He-Man. And then she says something to He-Man about being his sister, and he's like, sister? Because the sorceress did not bother to ever tell him anything about that.
So worn out right now. I'm so tired.
They're reunited. They go and destroy Hordak's teleporting machine. Again, all that they do is Hordak fires the teleporter, She-Ra throws a rock into the air, and instead of teleporting the forest, he teleports a rock.
Yeah, and they have no more Angus Scrims with which to charge it.
Right. So that's the end of that, basically. Yeah. Hordak is defeated. You think that should be it. It should be over now.
Then we looked at the time, and there were 47 minutes left in the movie.
Right, so we get 2 more episodes, one in which He-Man and She-Ra save the queen, Angela, who they cannot decide whether her name is Angela or Angela. It is said both ways multiple times. In fact, I think even like the same characters say her name different ways, because we determined that they never do more than one take, I think.
Yes, they, like, this show, like, you kind of have to respect it. Like, how bad do you think the cuss word would have to be for them to actually do another take and not just, like, kind of hastily chop it out? Like, do you think, Like, do you think they would do it if they just said shit? Do you think they would do it if they said fuck? Do you think it would have to be, like, racial?
I don't know. I think we'd have to, like, go back in time to 1985 and ask Lou Scheimer, you know, just how much does it take to do a second take on this thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say there were maybe like 4 second takes in this entire movie. 0 third takes.
They save the queen. That's the end of that episode from Harvey's.
Then they go to Eternia and have dinner with He-Man's parents.
That's right. She-Ra meets her parents, and Hordak, still feeling very angry about everything that's happened, turns into a missile and fires himself into Eternia to follow them. He goes and he meets up with Skeletor, who we find out was his student.
And this is where the hey kids, buy all these new toys aspect of the show, this is where it gets shameless. Because, like, hey kids, not only is She-Ra the twin sister of He-Man, this guy that you already like, but Hordak is friends with Skeletor. So if you like the bad guys, the bad guys are friends too, and they, you know, you need to get them together.
It's not even that he was his friend. It's that he was his mentor.
He taught him how to be so evil.
So Hordak is actually cooler than Skeletor, guys. He taught Skeletor everything he knows. So Hordak goes to Skeletor and, like, tries to propose this deal where they're going to kidnap Adora / She-Ra so that Hordak can take her back to Etheria and make her his captain again, right? His force captain. Because he's pretty mad that Adora left the Horde.
And it's like, was Adora good at being a member of the Horde?
Apparently she was very good. Like,
but like, she didn't know that they did any bad things. Like, was she like just in accounting?
I think she just thought that they were doing the right thing.
Yeah, but she's not marching with the robots who are out, like, you know, oppressing the citizenry.
She's not leading the slaves, but she is trying to put down the rebellion, who she sees as evil.
I feel like Adora, because Adora's in the fright zone, she stays in the fright zone. I feel like Adora was like basically doing like management work.
Oh, also, she knew it was called the fright zone. She stayed in a place called the fright zone.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's good. That's good.
So Skeletor and Hordak very easily.
Real quick, the DC recently did a bunch of comics, a bunch of Masters of the Universe comics, and Keith Giffen did a bunch of them. He did a really, really good Hordak, like, one-shot. And his, like, Masters of the Universe comics, they were really Kirby-inspired. And he did, like, a She-Ra origin, where She-Ra was, like, full-on, like, female fury when she was part of the Horde. Like, she was an actual, like, they have brainwashed her to be, like, a warrior. Which makes a lot of sense if that's the origin they're going to go with. Because, like, here it's just, like, she's a really nice person, like, working for this dude who wears bones.
So Hordak and Skeletor very easily go and kidnap Adora, right? There's almost nothing to it. Like, Man-in-Arms can't stop them. Prince Adam can't stop them. The king and queen don't stop them. And the next shot we see of the king and queen in the castle, the queen is just, like, slumped over in her throne. Like, just feeling completely helpless because the daughter that she just was able to be reunited with has been kidnapped again.
Yes.
So He-Man has to, like, you know, man up and go back to Skeletor's hideout and try to get her back. But also, we have Skeletor pulling a swerve where he sends Hordak back to Etheria and then is like, now what am I going to do with you, Princess Adora? And then I'll be totally honest with you. I don't remember what happened after that. I just remember that He-Man got Adora back.
Yeah, he goes and saves her.
I think maybe she turns into She-Ra and like beats them. But whatever the case.
That sounds about right.
Whatever the case, Skeletor is easily defeated. Like, everything is just so easy. Then, this is the part that just, like, why is this a movie? Like, how, what is the, who thought of the fucking structure of this thing? Once she's rescued, He-Man and She-Ra go back to Etheria and get the castle back from Hordak. There's a huge battle to win back control of the castle from Hordak that lasts 6 minutes. It is 6 minutes of the total movie. This 96-minute movie, they win the biggest battle of the whole movie, the thing that the whole movie should have been about, in 6 minutes. Hordak is completely defeated. He disappears. And they take the castle back. And like the queen, who's Angela, you know, she's back in charge of Etheria.
Yeah. Which is really weird, because they completely defeat Hordak, and then there's, you know, a television show. That happens.
Yeah, Hordak isn't in charge of Etheria anymore, but he's still around.
Yeah, but they're still the rebellion, and they still live in the woods. Yeah. I think they restore Angela to the throne of that town.
Perhaps. It seems like she takes over all of Etheria again, but I don't care anymore. That's the movie. All right, Chris. High points of Secret of the Swords. There probably won't be very many.
The music.
The music, which really we have not mentioned up to now, is fantastic. If I could have just sat here and listened to the music from this movie for an hour and a half, instead of watching the movie for an hour and a half, I would have been 20 times happier.
Yeah, we would have jammed out.
The music is really good. She-Ra's theme music is the best. It's this like
She-Ra.
It's this jamming disco tune.
Yeah, I called it power disco.
Yeah,
like it gets me pumped.
And then the rest of the soundtrack is this like synthy electronic music that I described as like the happiest Justice album you could imagine.
Yeah, it's really good. Aside from the music, there was a part of this movie that I laughed at for about 2 solid minutes.
You talking about when they cross swords?
Yes. Like, this movie is like a 19-part erotic fanfic with all the actual sex cut out and everything else left back in. Every scene that Bo and He-Man are in together, it's like, oh, like this is gonna end with those dudes like making out with each other at least. But there's a part where He-Man is fighting someone and he just goes, "Let's cross swords." And I almost died.
I mean, it's She-Ra that he's talking to, not another dude.
Yeah, but it's like, how has that clip not been isolated and just spread around the internet?
It does seem just ripe for ridicule. Yeah, I would actually call like how porny this is, this whole movie is, a high point, because it makes it so much more enjoyable to watch, to think about every scene leading into sex.
Yes. Because it's like really super slashy.
It really feels like that's where everything is going. Except for during the She-Ra He-Man parts, which that's just gross. Okay.
Those are my only high points.
I will add, and we said this, the animation is better than the TV show. It is not good per se. But I'll say that I appreciated the animation at a level beyond what I appreciate the animation in the TV show. And I think that's it for high points. Chris, low points of Secret of the Sword. Let's start with voice acting. It's only these 7 people, and every voice is grating. every single one. Catra is somebody trying to do an Eartha Kitt impression, and it just being like nails on a fucking chalkboard. We talked about Madame Raz being
Andrew Dice Clay's wife.
I need to save She-Ra.
Make me a frying pan. You know?
Oh, how much boy. Better would this movie have been if they just had to fucking deal with Matt? Like, if Madame Raz couldn't just cast a second spell, like, how much better would this movie have been if they were like, yeah, I guess we gotta attack the Horde in a giant fucking frying pan. Why would you do that and then not, like, not just stick with it? Because that would be fun!
Yeah, but they make her make a real flying ship instead. Yeah. But
pointless.
There's a scene in the episode where they go back to Eternia where Princess Adora is talking to her parents, telling them a story about Madame Raz and how often she fucks up. And after the story is over, her parents laugh. King Randor and Queen Marlena laugh. And their reaction instead should be, she sounds like the fucking worst. Why do you hang out with her?
Well, they hang out with Orko.
She's such a fuck up. Oh, well, then their reaction is to say like, oh yeah, Orko fucks up all the time too. Ha 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 ha. It's just like, why are your magicians fuck ups? At least the magicians on the bad guy side do things right.
Like Shadow Weaver's kind of a badass.
She's good. Like she's
Shadow
able
Weaver
to.
Does look like sexy cosplay Orko?
She does.
Like if you're a sexy lady cosplaying as Orko,
Madame Raz looks like Orko too. Like there are not a lot of design differences between these characters.
And the weird thing is, Madame Raz has the most complicated costume. Like there's like a flower on her on the tip of her hat that spins like a pinwheel when she flies. Like nobody else gets that level of like animation detail.
No, the only other character that gets that level of animation detail is Cringer, who is constantly cringing in every shot. And boy, do I hate the Cringer voice.
Oh, Cringer's bad. I do like when in the beginning when He-Man goes to that bar. And Cringer, like, orders a fish. And the guy's like, did your giant cat just talk? And He-Man goes, yeah, doesn't everybody?
Yeah.
Like that. And that is how he solves that problem. Like, yeah,
that,
of course he talks.
That,
like,
part is, like, that part is not bad. But then Cringer eats
talks,
his...
You racist. Like, that's...
But then Cringer eats his fish in one... Like, he sucks up the edible part of the fish... In one bite.
He certainly does suck.
Leaving the bones. Again, no animation to make Cringer eat. So he just magically vacuums up the edible parts of the fish. And he goes, I think I'm gonna like it here. And then the Hordak soldiers come in and he goes, never mind. And it's awful.
It's really bad. Like, none of the characters are, like, really all that sympathetic or relatable. Like, there's no, like, character work.
But like, in addition to, at the very least, you expect your characters in a kid's action cartoon show to be capable and cool, and none of them are. They all fuck up all the time. They're all terrible. Like, He-Man is constantly getting captured. She-Ra constantly gets captured. Battle Cat's the only one that does anything. And the bad
Everybody
guys
sucks.
Completely suck, too. Everybody sucks.
Everybody sucks. That's what we're talking about. Because, like, the third time He-Man got captured, we were like, dude, everybody sucks. Like, everybody's really terrible. Like, the bad guys are terrible because, like, they've captured He-Man three times and they can't kill him.
Oh, we didn't even talk about this. We didn't even talk about this. Swiftwind, who is She-Ra's horse, dies. He's so shitty, he dies.
That's true. And then She-Ra brings him back to life.
Yeah.
She-Ra's kind of a Christ figure.
She kind of is.
Weirdly enough.
She's got healing powers, and she can hear, like, she's got, like, empath abilities.
She can, like, talk to animals.
Yeah.
It is so obvious that the producers of He-Man... Like, again, I'm a G.I. Joe guy. G.I. Joe let Steve Gerber write two episodes. Like, G.I. Joe has a little bit of respect for their audience. the producers of He-Man are just like, hey, kids are dumb. Yeah. Kids are really, really dumb.
Yeah, so we don't think that they're going to know, because somebody said it 5 minutes ago,
yeah,
that Glimmer is Queen Angela's daughter. So we better keep saying it.
Yeah, like, hey, kids are idiots. So you don't, like, just don't try. Like, it'll be fine.
But you know what else? You know what else? Even though kids are idiots, we're not going to structure this movie as a movie. We're going to make it the weirdest fucking structure for a story you've ever seen. Where the gigantic, massive battle that involves tanks and flying machines and storming a castle takes 6 minutes at the end of the fucking movie.
Yeah. And by the way, I keep bringing up G.I. Joe because this is – it's contemporary. Like, this movie is out in 1985. G.I. Joe, like, they did the five-part episodes a lot. Like, the opening – like, the first adventure for G.I. Joe is a five-parter. The Serpentor episode of G.I. Joe is a five-parter. And it's actually pretty good. Like, Arise, Serpentor, Arise, like, makes sense in as much as it can. Like, in as much as let's get the DNA of history's greatest military leaders and this pro wrestler and make a snake man. Like, that's at least – I would watch G.I. Joe the movie 100 times before I would watch this again.
Yeah. Final thoughts about Secret of the Sword. I mean, I guess you just gave them.
Yeah, yeah.
I would
watch G.I. Joe, the movie, which I hate, 100 times before I would watch this again. But Matt, do you want to cross swords?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Okay.
That's it for this episode of Movie Fighters, everybody. The Secret of the Sword was awful, terrible, abysmal. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode, but before that, we need to give you the rundown. If you would like to email us, you could do that at moviefighterscast@gmail.com. That's where you can let us know your movie suggestions, where you can just send us comments and questions, because sometimes we do a questions segment on this show, occasionally. You can also be sure to check out our website, which is moviefighterscast.com. That's where you can stream the show, you can download the show. You could read some basic show notes about each episode, and you can leave comments there as well. Also, be sure to check us out on Tumblr. We're at moviefighters.tumblr.com. We have 25 episodes of this show. If you are just hearing it for the first time on iTunes, there are 25 episodes that you can pay $1 each for on Bandcamp. You can get those at moviefighters.bandcamp.com. You've heard us talking about G.I. Joe the movie. That's where you can get that episode if you want to listen to that. Our theme music is by Michael Kill. There's a link to his Bandcamp page on our website at moviefighterscast.com. Be sure to go check out all his music. His music for us is great, and we don't mention him nearly enough on this show. Thanks once again to all our Kickstarter backers for backing the show. Even the horrible person who suggested this movie for us to watch.
Enemies list. You're on the enemies list. You got a lifetime ban, and you're on the enemies list.
I don't know.
But thank you. Thank you for your contribution to the Kickstarter, for real.
Yes, and we've got to get through 7 more of those listener suggestions before the end of the year. We'll be doing that. Thanks for listening to this episode of Movie Fighters, everybody. Be sure to check back with us in 2 weeks. We'll see you then.
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.